I don't know why he made this mistake. So some say it should be in front. Okay, then a long quotation from the Patisambhita. Now let's go to next page 294. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. Now, he trains thus, I shall breathe in, making known, making plain the beginning, middle, and end of the entire in-breath body. And I shall breathe out, making known, making plain the beginning, middle, and end of the entire out-breath body. Thus he trains, making them known, making them plain. In this way, he both breathes in and breathes out with consciousness associated with knowledge or understanding. That is why it is said, he trains thus, I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out. Now, yes. Now, first, the English translation is experiencing the whole body. But the explanation given in the commentary is not experiencing, but making clear, making known, making plain. That means trying to see the breath clearly. The word, the Pali word, patisamvedi, can mean to experience. But here, it is explained as meaning to make clear, to make evident.
Mm-hmm. But there's some commentators, Tishnanhan, among others, say that the whole body refers
to... I'll come to that. First, about experiencing, the word experiencing. So, making clear or making plain the whole breath body. Now, we come to the breath body. The Pali word is just kaya. Kaya means just body. Now, the commentary explained it as in-breath body or breath body. Body here means not the whole body, but just the breath. The breath is here called body. Now, the Pali word kaya means group. Our body is a group of different parts. So, the breath is also a group of particles, small particles of matter. So the breath is also called kaya. So here, by the word kaya, is meant the breath body, not the whole body. So in the commentary explains this way, and this commentary is based upon the Patisambhita Magga just mentioned. So in the Patisambhita Magga also it is explained as meaning breath body, in-breath and out-breath. But now, there are people who said it must mean the whole body. And so they sweep the body, they look through the body or all over the body for sensations. Now, observing the sensations in the body is not against vipassana, not against the teachings of the Buddha. But if you say that observing the sensations going all through the body is according to this passage, then you are wrong. Because this passage has to do with breathing meditation. Breathing meditation means meditation taking breathing as an object. If you look for sensation, if you observe sensation, you are no longer watching the breath. So it is no longer a breathing meditation, mindfulness of breathing meditation. It becomes other kind of contemplation on the body. Or it may be even sensations, contemplation on feeling. So, in practice, you can do the sweeping of the body, if you want to, if you have gained a certain degree of concentration, you can watch the sensations in the body. It is not against vipassana, but it is not according to this passage.
Mm-hmm.
Because this passage is shown in with regard to breathing meditation.
Mm-hmm. And this passage is more samatha meditation.
Yes, it is a samatha.
Sweeping will be samatha, it would be vipassana.
It should be vipassana meditation.
But given that, I still find it hard to think of breathing meditation as samatha rather than vipassana, because the object is changing.
No, in breathing, in samatha meditation, breathing meditation as samatha meditation, the object doesn't change.
Because it's just the tip of the nose. Is that?
You keep the mind at the tip of the nose, but the object of meditation is the breath, in breath and out breath. So you don't pay attention to other objects, and then you try to keep your mind on the object. That's why next week we will find that you have to make counts in one, out one, in two, out two, and so on. So you take the breath as object only, only the breath as object. So it is samatha meditation.
So to be aware of the body at all, it would have to at least be vipassana.
That's right. Yes.
So when you divide it at the beginning, the first four Jusabhatis, the first foundation of mind, and the second is foundation of feeling.
Feeling, yeah.
So this has something to do, with the question, with this passage? When you talk about the body?
When you talk about the body, it means the breath body. The breath, not the whole body. And also, here, seeing or being aware of the beginning, middle and end of the breath. That means keeping your mind here. And when it goes in and goes out, past this point, then you try to see this is beginning, middle, end, and beginning, middle, end, like that. So, we cannot say that this passage means the whole body. In this passage, the kaya means the whole body. And then, to one, only the beginning may be clear. And to another, the middle may be clear, or the end may be clear. But to yet another, all stages may be clear. So we should be like that person. That is what is explained in paragraph 172. And in 173, he says, he trains, he strives, he endeavors in this way. Or else the restraint here, in one such as this is training in the higher value, his consciousness, his concentration, not consciousness. His concentration is training in higher consciousness. And his understanding is training in higher understanding. So he trains in, repeats, develops, repeatedly practices these three kinds of training on that object, by means of that mindfulness, by means of that attention. That is how the meaning should be regarded here. You know, the three trainings, actually three trainings are morality, concentration, and wisdom of panya. They are called three training. Here, they are called three higher training. They are the same as the other one, and just a little bit different. So here, the patimokkha restraint is called higher virtue here. Training in the higher virtue, and the jhanas are called the training in higher consciousness, and enlightenment is called training in higher understanding or wisdom. So, training in higher consciousness means attainment of jhanas and other, we call samapatis. So, in this method, Buddha said he trains and so on. So herein, in the first part of the system, that is numbers 1 and 2, he should only breathe in and breathe out and not do anything else at all, and it is only afterwards that he should apply himself to the arousing of knowledge and so on. Consequently, the present tense is used here in the first text. He knows I breathe in, he knows I breathe out. So just He is to know that he is breathing in and breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, just that. But in this method, he must apply himself, or he must train himself. He must make effort, special effort, to make clear the beginning, the middle, and end of each in-breath and out-breath. That is why here the future tense is used. I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out. So that means there is some effort involved here. Not just being mindful of in-breath and out-breath. In addition to being mindful of in-breath and out-breath, he has to know, to clearly see the beginning, the middle, and end of the breaths. And then the next is 4. I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formations. Now, tranquilizing the bodily formations does not mean that you must deliberately tranquilize the breath. You must deliberately make the breath subtler. You cannot do that, actually. What is meant is, just pay attention to the breath, and as your mind calms down, then the breath will become more and more subtle. That is what is meant here. So, you cannot make them subtle by just breathing very softly or something like that. But because it will come with practice, you don't have to do it. Now, bodily formation. The word bodily formation is used here. And you know what that means? What is bodily formation?
The breath.
Only the breath is called here bodily formation. That is why it is difficult to correctly understand in some places, because the same word is used in different meaning. Now the Pali word is kaya sankhara. I think you are familiar with the word sankhara. So kaya sankhara is translated as bodily formation. But I don't know what formation means. The act of forming, or something which is formed, both?
Something that is formed.
Oh, something that is formed.
But it could also mean the formation of a circle.
So here it means something that is formed. So bodily formation means bodily formed. That means the breath is said to be caused by mind. There are 4 causes of material properties. Karma, mind, climate, and food. So, mind is one of the causes of material properties. Now, the breathing in and breathing out is said to be caused by mind. Although it is caused by mind, the breathing in and out is caused by mind, it needs the physical body to arise. If there is no body, there can be no breathing at all. So it is described as formed by the body. That means formed with the help of the body. So I think in the footnote, bodily formation, the in-breath and out-breath, for although it is consciousness originated, although it is caused by consciousness, mind, it is nevertheless called bodily formation since its existence is bound up with the, not karma-bound body, it is bound up with the physical body, not karma-bound, not necessarily karma-bound. So physical body, and it is formed with that as the means. But if there is no physical body, there can be no breath at all. So it is said to be formed by, or made by, or maybe conditioned by the physical body. So it is called bodily formation.
Is there a body then that is not
karma? What?
Is there any kind of body that is not karma born?
There are material properties which are caused by karma. For example, the sensitivity in the eye, sensitivity in the ear, and so on, they are caused by karma. And voice, I mean, sound of voice, is caused by consciousness of mind, as well as by some other cause. So, when a rock hits against something, then there is noise, right? And that is caused by, not caused by mind. But when I speak, then my voice is caused by mind. So there are four causes of material properties, and since breath is a material property, it must have a cause, and according to Abhidhamma, it is caused by consciousness. So it is called consciousness originated. Although it is caused by consciousness, it is not called consciousness formation here, but it is called bodily formation, because it has to depend on the body, physical body, for its arising. So it is not necessarily karma bond body, but it is physical body. And so before we practice meditation, or if we do not practice meditation, our breathing is said to be gross. But when we sit down and practice meditation and try to discern the breathing, then it becomes more and more subtle. It will become so subtle that he has to investigate whether they exist or not. Sometimes yogis are alarmed, afraid, because they said they had stopped breathing at all, and they wonder whether they are living at all, whether they are alive at all. So the breathing is different from other objects of meditation, like casino discs, or dead bodies, and so on. Other objects become clearer with the development of concentration. The better your concentration becomes, the clearer these objects, or these images of these objects, become. But it is opposite with the breath. The better you get concentration, the more subtle it becomes, and the more difficult it is to see. So you have to apply effort and understanding, so that you do not lose it. So it will become so subtle that you wonder whether you are breathing at all, or whether you have stopped breathing. So it will reach to such a state. Now, why is that? Because previously, at the time when he has still not discerned, that means when he has not practiced, when he does not practice meditation, there is no concern in him, no reaction, no reaction really. Do you see the words? Paragraph 178. No reaction really means no adverting, no thinking of that. No attention, no reviewing to the effect that I am progressively tranquilizing each grosser bodily formation. But when he has discerned, there is. So his bodily formation at the time when he has discerned is subtle in comparison with that at the time when he has not. So the breathing becomes subtle, more and more subtle, with the growth of concentration. And you do not have to make them subtle. You cannot make them subtle at all. You just keep your mind on the breath and try to discern it thoroughly, to see clearly the beginning, the middle, and the end of it. And then, when you reach the next stage, they will become very subtle. So you don't have to make them subtle, but they will become subtle. So you have to train yourself. I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation, but not really tranquilizing them, but just they become tranquil, they become subtle. And then in paragraph 179, the relative subtlety is given. In discerning the meditation subject, the formation is gross, and it is subtle by comparison in the first jhana access. That means when you first practice meditation, the breath is gross, and when you reach to the excess concentration, it becomes subtle. And then, by comparison, it is gross at that stage of excess concentration, but it is subtle at the stage of first jhana. And then, in the first jhana and the second jhana excess, it is gross. And in the second jhana, it is subtle, and so on. So, grossness and subtlety are here compared with the jhana, and then a neighborhood of jhana, and then next jhana. So, in the beginning it is gross. And when you reach the neighborhood concentration, it is subtle. Then, at the neighborhood concentration, it is gross. At the first jhana, it is subtle. Then, at the first jhana, it is gross. It is subtle in the neighborhood of second jhana. And then it is subtler in the second jhana, and so on. So, subtleness is described with the development of meditation or concentration. And there are two opinions. The first one is the opinion of the Diga and Samyukta reciters. And the second is the Majjhima reciters. But just a little bit different. Now, you know there are Nikayas or collections of long suttas, collection of medium suttas, and collection of, let's say, miscellaneous suttas, small suttas, kindred suttas. Now, there are monks who made a special study of one collection. And they have some opinion that may be different from those who specialize in another collection, and so on. So there is difference between these teachers, so these reciters. So Diga and Sanyuta reciters think this way, and the Majjhima reciters think the other way. But in the case of insight, that was in the case of Samatha meditation. But in the insight meditation, the bodily formation occurring at the time of not discerning is gross, and in discerning the primary elements, it is by comparison subtle, and so on. So this paragraph describes the development in Vipassana meditation. It is gross in the preceding stage, and then subtle in succeeding stage, and so on. And then a long quotation from the Patisamvita Magga. So, actually we have come to the end of the first four methods. You remember the first four methods? What is one? You know, you breathe in long when you breathe long, and you breathe out long when you breathe out long. So, long breath, short breath, and then what? Making clear the whole breath body, and then tranquilizing the breath body. So these four methods, these pertain to Samatha meditation, and so they will be explained later. And the other groups of four have to do with jhanas, and also with the other types of foundations of mindfulness. They will be explained later.
But it's still Samatha meditation, the other two?
They can be Samatha, and they can be Vipassana, depending on how you practice. You practice on the breath, and you get jhana, and then you dwell on, say, happiness or piti there, And if you observe PT as impermanent, then it becomes vipassana. It will be described later. Now, for the bodily formations, meaning breathing in and breathing out, please see paragraph 181. There, the text from Patisamvita Magga is quoted. And in the text, I shall breathe in, shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. What are the bodily formations? Long in-breaths, out-breaths, experiencing the whole body, belong to the body. These things, being bound up with the body, are bodily formations. This is the explanation of the word bodily formations. They are called bodily formations because they are bound up with the body. They belong to the body. Without body, they cannot arise. So bodily formations mean in-breath and out-breaths. Did you read the footnotes too? Some are difficult to understand.
Some
very difficult, right? So I cannot go through them in detail. But on page 294, in the footnote, about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines, that is, what is meant is this. The contemplation of the body as an, and so on and so on. And it's very difficult to understand that translation. What is meant is this. The contemplation of the body as an in-breath and out-breath body as stated and of the physical body, that is its material support, which is not contemplation of permanence, etc., in a body whose individual essence is impermanent, etc., and so on and so on. So, I made a new translation. So if you're interested, you may ask a copy from Michael.
Okay. Hope you ask some questions too.
I think it's a little better.
It's laid out better anyhow.
I shall breathe in and I shall breathe out. Okay then. Next week, from paragraph 186.
So once again, next week will be the last week until we start resuming again in July.
Next? Let me see. Oh no.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Now we have two more weeks. Oh yeah. Oh. That's right. Two more weeks. So page 299 to 311. Not many this time.
Lots of
footnotes.
So next class is going to be the method of development of the first.
The method of development.
Of the first one.
Yeah, and then the last class will be on what commentary continued third treatise, page 311, paragraph 231, to the end of the chapter. So two weeks more.